Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Back in the friendly confines of the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. What a day yesterday at beautiful Penn's Tavern. Wow, the food was great. Wow, the atmosphere was great. The company was great. We had ourselves quite a day yesterday. That was something else. Thanks to Chris Wheeler for carving time out of his valuable schedule and time to come up and be with us yesterday. Great day yesterday. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did.
Instant classic.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, get to the podcast page at stevejonesshow.com. You would have thought that you and Wheels were doing this show for like 5 years. And you're just bouncing off each other just for 2 hours straight, and it felt like 2 minutes.
Well, I just genuinely respect and like the guy a lot. I really do. Let's get to see the suit out there. Wheels got a kick out of the suit thing. He said, that's a riot. I said, yeah, it sure is. Yeah. It's a riot.
Yeah, layers of the onion were peeled yesterday with our special guests there for our after show party. It's like, who is the suit? It's like,
so we identified who the suit happened to be.
Like Wizard of Oz, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Oh, that's the man behind the curtain.
And I guess he sold something yesterday, so I guess like life's amazing.
I love it. That keeps us around another week or two. I'm all in favor.
I don't know. I want verification.
Get that document notarized.
I mean, seriously, I want verification. We have a lot going on the next week or so. A lot going on.
Just a little while ago, I didn't get a chance to tell you this, but next week we will have Otto Bolton, track and field analyst from NBC Sports, and he was Tom Hammond's right-hand man calling the Usain Bolt gold medal runs next week, last couple weeks in Rio. We will have Otto on next Wednesday.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes.
That's terrific. I thought he was great. The reviews on him at the Olympics were awesome.
Yeah, I follow. There's a sports media outlet called Awful Announcing. It's kind of a joke website title, but awfulannouncing.com. And yeah, they would say that if you'd have to pick one guy who was the best overall announcer at NBC's Rio coverage was Otto Bolton.
Well, so we'll have him on Wednesday. Good. It looks like we're going to go Jack Ham on Monday. Why not? He calls me today. Now, you know we have the Titanic golf match of the century coming up. Okay. On Sunday. Wakeman is very disappointed she is not involved. I said, Jen, they're the ones that set up. So she's upset. So now, my ace is mad at me.
Can't get her upset.
I understand that. But the teams are set. The teams are not what I thought they were going to be. The teams are set. Ron Moeller, and Mike Wagner are teamed up. Jack and I are teamed together.
Happy day. Happy dance.
Well, he calls up today. He says, look. He says, well, what's your number? What's your index? I said, well, I fluctuate between 11 and 12, so let's just say 12. He goes, okay, good. We can't lose to these guys. I said, do you want me to go out and get a ringer, get like Mike Weir, some, Bubba Watson, somebody who's left-handed to go out and play? I said, he goes, no, just bring your A game. We cannot lose to these guys. Oh, great.
But you were worried all along. The pairs have been flipped.
The pairs got flipped. I thought it was with Mike. It said I'm with Jack. Well, now I'm getting threatening phone calls. Okay. Oh, all this so we can do a luncheon at the Duquesne Club.
A tradition unlike any other, from what I've heard.
Yes, we have done this. Let me quickly say, the Duquesne Club is a beautiful place. I've done... Boy, I think I've probably done 15 events there now over the years, maybe. And Jack and I have done this pairing together as the guest speakers at the Duquesne Club, I think the last 10 years in a row. And when I talk about the Duquesne Club, I'm talking about downtown Pittsburgh. This is not Duquesne University. This is the Duquesne Club. Different. And these are all the top bank executives, all the top pirate executives, all the top the U.S. Steel executives have been there. I mean, you talk about the financial elite in the community. There is no greater thrill than standing up in front of 60 or 70 of these individuals, taking one quick glance around the room and realizing that you are the single poorest person in the room. You're standing there, you're looking around at these people, and you're saying to yourself, so these people want to hear what I have to say? Really? Okay, that tells you at this point, life's a bit warped.
They'll all be checking at their watches when you get up to the podium. All right, let's just jump right to the pit game.
Oh, yeah, I know, they will. But you noticed yesterday with the group when I asked, who would you rather play, Notre Dame or Pitt? And you notice who won? Notre Dame won.
Yeah, I would say about two-thirds, one-third.
Yeah. That's the way it is. If I ask that exact question in the western half of the state, so if I go to Dubois or Clearfield, Altoona, Ebensburg, Johnstown, Newcastle, Pittsburgh,
I'd probably say anything west of I-99.
Right. Johnson City, whatever it happens to be. All right, I've spoken all those places, okay? St. Mary's. And if I ask that question in that side of the state, it is 80-20 Pitt. If I ask that question in the eastern half of the state, it's usually 75-25 Notre Dame. If I ask that question up at Scranton, I've already been to Scranton this year. Scranton is about 80-90 Notre Dame. It's interesting. Even among Penn Staters in the state, there is a divide about what the Pitt game means. Now, the goal around here forever always has been to win the national championship. That's always been the goal. And along the way, if you happen to get a Big Ten championship or a Lambert Trophy or something like that, that's fine. That all plays into you winning the national championship. And in today's world, getting to the college football playoff is the big thing. And the competition to get to the college football playoff is intense and it's deeply scrutinized because only four teams make it. So your conference schedule may be enough to get you there. Maybe. But sometimes if you happen to be a really good team and the race is on and it's comparable conferences, it's an SEC team, it's a Big Ten team, whatever, and they'll look at the non-conference schedule, what is going to give you a little more RPI cachet? Beating Pitt or beating Auburn? I mean, which one will give you the RPI cachet? Beating Pitt or beating Auburn? The perception is right now that Pitt is a good football team. Pitt's a good program. But Auburn, over the years, has occasionally warped into being a great program. Pitt has not. Pitt has not been a great program since the late 70s, early 80s. And Auburn lapses in and out of being great and among the elite and being very good. And that's why a lot of people around here were excited to see the Auburn series get on there, because I think that is a potential difference-making game in your schedule. Not that Pitt this year is not a difference-making game. It is, but I'm talking about national. I'm talking about national. Yes, it's a deeply significant game locally, no question. It's a deeply significant game regionally, yes. But Penn State and Pitt is not a deeply significant game nationally. It just isn't. That's just with the current circumstances, it's not. It doesn't mean it can't one day warp into being that. But, yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, and that's something you have to consider. You do have to look at the big picture. Do you want to be the national champion or the state champion? And you have to set your schedule up that way. And man, part of the schedule also depends. You don't really know also on the draw what the draw from the other side of the conference is years in advance either. I mean, for this year, for example, you have a potentially outstanding Iowa team, a good Minnesota team, and a Purdue program that's really struggled. So that's a real balance from the other side. You get a potential top team, a potential middle team, and a potential bottom team. So Penn State actually ended up with a balance from the West. So you don't know, but you know. Well, I mean, we'll see how the four games with Pitt plays out. But I don't want Penn State to, you know, especially with the... If they have an eight-game schedule, you have the flexibility to schedule Pitt anytime you want. When you have a nine-game conference schedule, you don't. And we'll see how the four games goes. But I'd rather see some variety on that non-conference schedule. I mean a positive variety. I think Virginia Tech's a good piece to that puzzle. Auburn, I think, is a potentially great piece to that puzzle. West Virginia is a part of that puzzle. I don't want Penn State to get into the Iowa State thing, where Iowa, they've got their hands tied every year. They've got to play Iowa State. Well, what does that get you? I mean, I know it's a rivalry game, but what does it get you? I mean, I think most rivalry games are exponentially more significant when they're conference games. Stanford plays Cal, UCLA plays USC, Washington plays Washington State, Oregon plays Oregon, Oregon State plays Oregon, Arizona State plays Arizona, Michigan plays Ohio State, Auburn plays Alabama. You know, what really heightens those games above all is that they're not only... Yeah, but they're conference games. The non-conference games don't bring with them, I think, as much rivalry weekend. All right, well, South Carolina, Clemson, all right, you know. Florida State, Florida, all right. Georgia, Georgia Tech, okay. The non-conference ones, I don't think, carry as much punch or impact to them. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. big day for the suit yesterday. I got to hang out at the party, which was great. That's pretty much it. But you see, that's my point when it comes to this. I mean, playing Pitt, if you wanted to play them every year, if they had 8 conference games, I'd be all on board with it.
I think the one thing Pitt has to watch out for, just looking at their schedule, next week after they take on Penn State, they got to go to Oklahoma State. So yeah. They got to watch out they can't put all the eggs in the Penn State basket.
Yeah. Well, you literally should take them one at a time.
I mean, just with all the hype we're getting out of Western PA about just this one game on September the 10th, I mean, it's like their Super Bowl.
Oh, I understand that. Look, it's a sellout for them. It's great. It sold them more season tickets than anywhere we can. So, yeah. But whatever they can do. Let's see. A lot going on. It looks like the Lochte story is actually his version, as embellished as it was, beyond over the top, is actually closer maybe to reality. Did you know that? In the USA Today interviewed a separate eyewitness and the interpreter, because obviously those guys don't speak Portuguese. And this entire deal that he knocked down a door and they wrecked a sink and a mirror, no. The door wasn't damaged. The sink and the mirror weren't damaged. There was one thing, like barely hanging on by a thread on an outside wall, and he kind of took it off and looked at it. And evidently, these two off-duty police officers who were security guards did draw their guns, and they also showed their police badges. And then they told them they had to give them money to leave. Yeah.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It was fun to see everybody yesterday. Well, fun to see Ben Reichley. Great to see Mark, Jen, everybody. And, of course, my man, Sean, there.
Great to finally catch up with you after 5.5 months coming on board.
Yeah. A lot of fun. All right, today we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for This Day in Sports History. One of the great sprint swimmers of all time, Gary Hall, broke 3 world records at the AAU outdoor swimming meet in Los Angeles in 1970. 1982, Gaylord Perry, then with the Seattle Mariners, was tossed out of a game for throwing an illegal spitball. It finally caught him. So I love Major League. Vaseline ball hit the short. 1989, Pete Rose, the manager of the Reds, agreed to a lifetime ban from baseball after being accused of gambling on baseball. That was an interesting summer. John Dowd put a lot into that report. I mean, a lot. And there are certain elements of that report he left out. And the reason he left it out was he couldn't prove it at the time. Now, that tells me something about the quality of the report if you leave stuff out because you can't quite prove it. and the report was rather thorough to the point where, I mean, he had some physical evidence of betting slips and things like that. And, I mean, do you really think that Major League Baseball wanted to throw the all-time hit leader out of the game? Ban him? I mean, do you think so? I don't think they wanted to. Dowd, by the way, does not think Pete Rose should be admitted to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Dowd also does not think that he should be allowed to coach, and he does not think that he should be able to work in pro baseball. And 1989 in February, Major League Baseball heard reports about Pete Rose and the possibility he was betting as a player manager with the Reds. Dowd had been a high-profile criminal defense lawyer, federal organized crime prosecutor. So Peter Ueberroth was the commissioner at the time, and he was hired to be a special counsel. Ueberroth then retired during Dowd's investigation, and Bart Giamatti took over as the commissioner. I think people forget that this actually started with Peter Ueberroth. And it's not vague. The rule is not a vague rule. Any player, umpire, or club, or league official, or employee who shall bet any sum whatsoever upon any baseball game in connection with which the bettor has a duty to perform shall be declared permanently ineligible. I don't think that's vague. Dowd collected gambling ledgers, bank, phone records, court documents, took depositions from Rose's friends who placed bets for him. Did so with one of the bookies. They found that Rose was betting 5 to 10 games a day, every day. Basketball, football, hockey, baseball, and sometimes at a clip of $2,000 a game. According to Dowd, he was deeply in debt to the bookies. Evidently, he was down $200,000 to one in Staten Island. And they say he refused to pay substantial debts to his bookies at various times. Now, you and I both know that on the surface of that, if it were to be true, you would be in deep trouble, and I don't mean with the law. Dowd says that he felt Rose lied repeatedly during the deposition. Dowd would ask him, for example, if he'd been at a racetrack on a certain date. Rose, under oath, would deny it. Dowd would then show him documents providing that he was there that day. Rose would then admit it. Rose denied knowing people whom he had written checks to, left tickets for, who had testified extensively about hanging out with him. Now, Rose did make a fair amount of money, but remember, this is the 1980s. So Rose's top-out salary was $1 million a year. And according to what they figured out that he was possibly losing as much as $67,000 a month. Dowd showed Rose his own betting records in his own handwriting, and Rose denied it was his. Rose regularly bet on the Reds, the team he was managing, but never apparently against them. But again, and I've talked about this many times, people have said that when they've called the show to defend Rose, and I completely understand the premise, and I completely understand why someone would call to bring the premise up. Well, if he's betting on his own team to win, what is so bad about that? And That is a valid question and a very worthy discussion topic. Here's what the problem is. I have Rob Dibble as my ace reliever. I have now pitched Rob Dibble 3 days in a row. I should not pitch Rob Dibble tonight. If I am managing the player, managing the team, and managing the season, I should not pitch Rob Dibble tonight. But I have money on tonight's game. I've got a one-run lead in the ninth inning. I'm going to pitch Rob Dibble tonight, even though I pitched him two innings on Sunday, an inning and a third on Monday, one inning on Tuesday, and now here I am tonight, and I need him to get three outs. His arm is getting to be like Jell-O, but I need three outs, and he's the best guy I've got. I pitch him. Why? I've got money on the game. So now I'm no longer managing the team. I'm no longer managing my player, and I'm no longer managing my season. I'm no longer doing any of that. I have played, I'm trying to think who was even on that team. Let's just take a current Red. It'll just be easier. I have now played Joey Votto 32 days in a row. I've got money on tonight's game. Boy, it would really help Joey Votto to have today off. It would really help the team long-term if I gave Joey Votto the day off. I don't give Joey Votto the day off. I play him. He's in a deep slump, but he may produce a key hit for me. I play him. Now, obviously, there's a lot at stake when it's your job as the manager every single game. But you are not there to manage a single game. You are there to manage much more than the game. You're there to manage careers. You're there to manage players. You're there to manage games. You're there to manage the week. You're there to manage the season. Okay? I've got a pitcher. It's September. He's already thrown 270 innings this year. My arm's about falling off. We're out of the race. But I've got money on today's game. And I need seven innings out of him. How much am I jeopardizing my judgment, and how much am I jeopardizing his career even, because I need to win money that night? That's the issue with this. And that's why when the point is brought up about he bet on his own team to win, an absolutely valid point and an absolutely valid discussion point. That is really worthy of discussion. But that's my argument for it. You lose all perspective on what you're doing when you've got a personal stake in the game beyond just, we got to win this game. Okay? I've got Rob Dibble. I'll pitch him in back-to-back games, but he's got to have a day off. Okay? Got him. And then I can pitch him in back-to-back games and another day off, because that's the best way to handle him and get the most out of him for the entire season. But if I'm pitching him 4 days in a row because I need to get this save, because, man, I got some bread riding on this game, that changes everything. You really lose your own perspective, because now the game, which is already personal to begin with, now becomes incredibly personal because the stakes for you are higher. You put money on it. Now, he did not bet against the Reds. That's what the report shows. He turned over the report to Bart Giamatti. And Giamatti wanted to have a hearing with Rose on the evidence. Rose didn't respond. He never responded. He never sat down with the commissioner. And then he voluntarily accepted a permanent ban from baseball on this date in 1989. Then he applied for reinstatement in 99. Bud Selig never ruled on it. Uh, 15 years after the betting ban, Rose was lying about betting on baseball and the Reds. And Costa Kennedy wrote a book that explored how a manager could put his own interests ahead of his team when betting on them. And he makes the, okay, this is in the article here in the Washington Post. These are the same things I just literally just talked about. I didn't notice that till just now, but it's the same things. Overusing pitchers to win particular games rather than thinking about the impact on the team season. The prospect that Rose was betting on games he played in the years before 86 when Dowd began documenting Rose's wagering is not discussed, though he clearly was very experienced and deeply addicted gambler by 1986, according to the Costa Kennedy book. Dowd said Kennedy interviewed him and that based on the questions, it was clear he was carrying the water for Bud Selig and these guys who wanted Rose in baseball for years. He said Selig had long wanted to reinstate Rose, but was reluctant to reverse Giamatti's ban because he had helped install Giamatti in the first place. Dowd said that former player Lenny Dykstra and manager Don Zimmer told him that the Rose investigation caused them to stop gambling. He said Zimmer told him, he says, you saved me thousands of dollars. He said, I know other guys who gambled. It's a disease. It's a terrible thing. For that reason, he should not be allowed back. He shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame either. Now, Ty Cobb, Tris Speaker, not exactly the most outstanding citizens ever, but they were not investigated. Rose was. And Rose was given a chance to fight this with the commissioner and did not do it. Nolan Ryan called Giamatti on this date in 1989 and said, on behalf of 2,300 ball players, we want to thank you because we all follow the rules. And Ted Williams and Bob Feller both said should never be reinstated. So Dowd said apologizing to his former teammates is not reconfiguring your life. He said he still plays the ponies. He goes to casinos. And and Dowd never liked the fact that Rose always called Faye Vincent, Bart Giamatti, and himself corrupt and dishonest. Fascinating. And I've heard him interview. Fascinating guy. I mean, he got evidence. I mean, that's the difference. He actually got evidence. The betting slips, things like that. Amazing. But that was on this date, 1989. Boy, can you believe it? It's, what, we're talking 27 years now? Ooh. I was doing a talk show back then in the evenings. I remember talking about that all summer long. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC Way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
One other part about betting on your team. Okay, I needed to win last night's game. I bet on the game. Well, now I've depleted my bullpen to do it. So guess what I decide to do today? Not bet on the game. And because I blew out my bullpen yesterday, and so on and so forth, I kind of have a little half-hearted lineup going out there today. And you lose. And then you lose the race by a game. See, there are a lot of ways of looking at this. He bet on his own team. Okay. Well, what's it telling you on the days he didn't bet on his team? There's a lot of ways that this works where it doesn't work right. Yeah, you do the right thing and you don't bet. Okay. But because I bet the night before, and I'm talking like I pulled out every stop to win last night. And all these guys aren't available today. So guess what? I'm not betting. And believe me, the people he's putting money down with, right? They know, you know, if Pete didn't bet today, I think I'll go with the Cubs. There's so many. And if you then fall deeply in debt gambling, what's for them to come up to you and say, tonight you're not winning? Yeah, we are. No, you're not. You owe us, and pick a large figure. You're not going to win tonight's game. If you want to make this even, what's to say? Now, that didn't happen here, but what's to say that threat isn't available because you are in on the minus side with gamblers, with bookies? This proof of thought is the Pete Rose situation. 27th anniversary today, banned from baseball. Never met with the commish. Never did. They said, well, let's meet. Never returned the call.
But the New York Penn League gave him his due last week.
Yeah, what's he complaining about? He's in the New York Penn League Hall of Fame. We're done. Gabe wrote the press release.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.